So Huey Nung is one of our ancestors, and this person of interest, the so-called sixth patriarch, since he received Dharma transmission from the fifth and so on back to Bodhidharma, when he was a child, he was a fatherless boy. And Huey Nung and his mother sold wood in the marketplace in a small village to support themselves. They were very poor. And as he was out selling wood, and he was quite young, you know, the ages of this story, they range anywhere from 7 to 11 years old, I've heard. When he heard the following quotation from the Diamond Sutra, these are people who are speaking, and the monk came out and said, "Let your mind function freely without abiding anywhere or in anything." Let your mind function freely without abiding anywhere or in anything. Upon hearing these words, Huey Nung was instantly enlightened. Huey Nung made his way to the monastery of the fifth patriarch. He himself, of course, not having received any sort of transmission or recognition at this time, quite a young person, eventually makes his way to the monastery and joins. He is utterly transformed from this sentence. What happened to him in that moment? What happened when he heard those words? For me, when I hear these stories of sudden enlightenment, I find myself deeply curious about the experience of the practitioner, of the one awakening. What is this awakening that we hear about? What is this sudden enlightenment? What happened? These stories invite us to be curious about this. And interestingly, within the Soto tradition, we have a strong strain of Soto in our practice. We tend to downplay sudden enlightenment. We don't talk that much about it. And I think part of the reason for that is because we don't feel we have much control over when or how we might attain any sort of enlightenment. And the other great concern, of course, is that in talking about it, we truly muddy the waters. We talk about that which cannot be talked about. In doing so, we may end up creating, roadmaps in our minds that are not the thing itself. The words can never capture the experience. And so this real concern that we will get trapped in our own nets of concepts and language and get lost. Some would say like the early practitioners of Buddhism in China, all lost in their studies of metaphysics and sutras, who did not know whether the water was warm or cold. So here we have an example of someone where mind and body fall away, quite suddenly awakened by the words of a wise person nearby, much like our sutra just described. So touched, so deeply moved by this experience, that he went to the monastery and joined. And there he practiced quietly for some number of years, cooking rice. He could not read himself, uneducated. But there was a time where there was a contest about who could write the best poem to express the true nature. One person, the head monk, put a poem up that was, pretty good about keeping the mirror clean. if you will. And Wei Nung responded with a kind of challenging poem, no reason to keep the mirror clean. Our true nature is with us regardless. So perhaps an even more mature understanding from this person who nobody really knew, who was just in the kitchen quietly cooking rice. The fifth patriarch recognized the profundity of this poem and eventually gave transmission to Hui Nung. And he tells this story in the Platform Sutra of running away because the monks chased after him. A couple of them were pretty upset. One of them actually caught him. And he said, well, fine, take the robes. And he set down the robes that were given to him by the fifth patriarch. And the head monk tried to lift them and could not. Could not carry the weight of receiving transmission falsely. What is it that happens in enlightenment? So I think a big part of our literature is really encouraging us to inquire into this matter with some seriousness. Not to form conceptual roadmaps of it, but to make it an aspect of our practice. What does it mean to be awake? We have probably heard metaphors. One that I kind of like is the metaphor of driving and looking at, say, let's pretend you have a wonderful version of Google Maps. It's so good that all you have to look at is your phone as you drive. And then your passenger, your wise monk neighbor says, hey, could you open the window? And you say, I didn't know there were windows. And you open the window and look out and notice there's a barn with sunlight angling down upon it. Maybe hear bird songs and a breeze come through and wake up. It's so easy to be caught in our maps of the world, in our conceptual maps, and we don't even really know what's happening. Layer after layer of conceptions. And of course, very useful. Nothing we need to do to be rid of them. They are an important part of our being. They are the Buddha nature itself. But we can get so caught up in their content that we don't see their nature as permeable, as fluid, as unfixed. We don't recognize that they exist in a matrix of all being, that all these conceptions of separateness are literally just conceptions. Where do we find this truth? Of course, in our own minds. We look and we see. Again and again, invited to the cushion to explore. And to explore the words and phrases passed down to us from our ancestors that woke them up. To return to this phrase, let your mind function freely without abiding anywhere or in anything. There's nothing we need to do. There's nothing we need to change about the way our mind works. But there is a caution, isn't there? Without abiding, without necessarily getting stuck in a particular way of seeing or in particular views, every once in a while, by accident, our stuck places open up, fall away. We encounter life with a kind of freshness that touches us. Where the boundaries that had been erected by our minds seem to vanish. Simply present with things exactly as they are. Quite an experience. Each of us undoubtedly touched by this at different points in our lives. Our awakenings, not always the most dramatic, sometimes quite subtle. They're a compass setting, but not in the sense of creating a direction that we need to get to. For me, they are compass setting in the sense that they encourage me to remain curious about the way things actually are, because my mind will reify, harden into particular views in a very subtle and quick way without my knowing it. And so to drop in these questions, what is here now? What is this? And to look with great curiosity. I think that's the encouragement, the idea that we can, in fact, experience sudden enlightenment, be it subtle or magnificent, either way, that the possibility is actually here right now for each of us to wake up. To be freed from the entanglements of our minds, to simply see them as they are, without abiding in any fixed position, to be awakened by the 10,000 things, as Dogen puts it, as they simply manifest for us, without our abiding in any particular place. This is our practice of Shikhen Taza. Our encouragement to be deeply curious about the true nature of what is. To keep leaning in with some level of intensity in our practice. To have these moments of awakening that can never be held on to. And so we practice again and again. This is the gradual cultivation, to persist in our curiosity, in seeing again and again the sense of self arise, this notion of a particular viewpoint, and to become curious about it. To see it dissolve again and again into our boundless presence. This is our practice. It's funny because for me it has a kind of the importance of recognizing a kind of intensity to this work, a deep, real curiosity about liberation. How is it that this moment right here is liberation? Uh, this is not quite the practice of stress reduction. This is not the same as a kind of mellowing out. This is a real looking. A belief in some way that awakening is possible. Again and again, awakening is possible.